All right, continuing on the program now at 6:36, let's bring our first guest on for the morning, and that is Dr. Darden North. And Dr. North joins us this morning. We're going to talk a little bit about medical TV. Good morning, Dr. North.
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing well, and yourself?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
You know, it seems to me that television programs about doctors and hospitals have been popular since the very beginning of the medium. I mean, you go back to the 1950s, and you had the very popular Dr. Kildare program.
Right.
And then in the 60s, we had Dr. Marcus Welby.
Right.
In the 60s and 70s. And, you know, the trend has continued through the 80s and 90s and all the way till today. Why do we like these programs?
Well, I think there's generally a change in people's desires with television. I mean, they're tired of a lot of the terrorism and things like that, bombs going off, so they're looking for other things. So I think that's one reason you have seen a lot of these things pop up. But these shows have seemed to sort of focus on the medical characters themselves and their human qualities and their fallacies and their desires, and I think that's what's made it more fascinating than some of the older shows like Ben Casey and that kind of thing that you mentioned.
Yeah, and by the way, you know, you've had a chance to watch your share of these programs over the years. How do the newer programs today differ from the older programs?
Well, I think that, first of all, there's been such a technological boom with medicine, and people are more aware of what's out there. You know, they see things on the Internet. There are things constantly, you know, the health radio shows, things in the newspapers informing people. That's something you didn't have in the 50s and 60s and maybe even the 70s. So people you know, watch these medical shows, and they probably feel they know a little bit more about what the characters are doing as far as what's being portrayed there. So I think that's one difference. And then, of course, you have traditionally, you know, all the doctors aren't male anymore, and you have female doctors, and that brings in a whole new line of plots and things that can be evolved. So I think that's you know, dramatically a lot of the difference there, just the makeup of who the medical people are.
Now, you're a doctor. You are an MD, a board-certified OBGYN, and a member of the AMA.
Right.
And you're also a fellow at the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology. And so, you know, you're not just a TV critic commenting on this. You're the real deal. When you watch the medical programs, and you've watched them over the years, what's the the best way to put this is, as you watch them, do you see anything that resembles reality, or is it all just fantasy?
Well, you know, when someone's had a near-death experience, nearly drowned, was very hypothermic, and you know, they were giving her a lavage in her abdomen to save her life, and then suddenly she's well and off oxygen and visiting with her friends, that happened the other day on Grey's Anatomy, and that's, you know, sort of unrealistic, but you know, it's hard for a character to talk when she's on a ventilator.
Right.
You can't do that. and some of the things they have are really the very rare cases that, you know, would be very unlikely for a doctor to see in his lifetime that they show. So maybe that's part of the, you know, drama that these shows have. And if you want to watch something just, you know, technically true to life, then you can go to the Learning Channel and those kind of things.
Well, when you're watching these programs, do you ever see you know, like misdiagnoses, like the doctor, you know, the patient will say, well, such and such happened, and then the people that write the script will just, you know, put in some sort of answer, and do you, like, slap your forehead and say, no, don't do that, you'll kill the patient?
Well, I think I've been impressed, like, with ER, you know, how accurate a lot of those things are. Being an obstetrician gynecologist, you know, of course, I pay particular attention when it's some sort of OBGYN thing, and they do sort of make the deliveries in the emergency room very dramatic, but I do think they have a lot of medical consultants to try to make things as accurate as possible. It is funny when some of the characters sort of mispronounce a word or, you know, just get a fact that even, you know, a high school science student might pick up on. And but, you know, you see that in any kind of, you know, literature, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Little mistakes here and there.
Yeah, and one of the things that you write about is that there is a certain sex appeal of the TV stars, and that might be a big part of the attraction to these shows as well.
I think so. I mean, that's why I thought there might be a niche for writing, you know, medical fiction, like I've done with the two novels, and sort of capitalizing on this interest in, you know, what's going on behind the scenes, you know, with medical care.
Right. And the interesting thing, too, is that if we look at these TV shows from all the way back in the early days, like Ben Casey and Dr. Kildare, you know, sex appeal has always been part of it. And even today, to Grey's Anatomy and ER and many of these other programs, that's part and parcel what draws people to television programs. But you write that there's a what if factor. You know, you're the author of the book Points of Origin: A Medical Mystery, but you believe that there's a what if factor, and that's an important element in these television programs.
Well, sure, it's a what if factor for several reasons. Like, what if, you know, as the television viewer, was what if I am the poor patient there? What would I do? Or, you know, what if what if that happened to someone in my family? And then, or, you know, what if Dr. McDreamy were my doctor, or the blonde girl on Grey's Anatomy? You know, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Way off the charts.
Mm-hmm. And I guess one of the other things, too, is that people will watch things on television, medical programs, and they'll come and see Dr. North and say, well, you know, doctor, I was wondering, because I was watching this TV show the other night, you know, this medical program, and they said, and do you find that happening at all?
I really haven't seen that much, and since my practice is limited to obstetrics and gynecology, I don't get anybody coming in and asking about a brain tumor and that kind of thing, so I haven't seen that so much. I used to see a good bit of, and still do occasionally, people bringing in pages printed off the internet, things that they've gotten, you know, there. But I believe most of the time when people watch, you know, Scrubs and Grey's Anatomy and House, they do realize it's fiction. So, and they're, you know, maybe not letting it, you know, take over their lives too much.
Okay. And just a couple other questions I have for you. What are some of the more blatant mistakes that you see on the medical TV shows outside of the pronunciation problems?
I tell you, a lot of these shows like CSI and Criminal Minds and things, like the DNA analysis, the DNA results are like ready overnight,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's as though they have a stat DNA machine, and, you know, that takes weeks to get that kind of thing back, and that's always sort of a humorous thing, and basically, you know, DNA controls all of those shows. That's one thing, and of course on House, Dr. House there, you know, tells people off in the hall and, you know, acts gruff and that kind of thing, and you don't see that generally in this day and time in most hospitals and teaching institutions. You don't see, people being so hostile. Those are a couple of things that come to mind.
Mm-hmm. And then do you think these shows provide any valuable information for people?
I think that, if someone were really looking for valuable, you know, medical information, they really ought to probably, you know, seek out the, you know, like I said, the Learning Channel, Discovery Channel, and those kind of things. So I really don't think people watch TV medical dramas for medical information. I really think they're just watching, to see the human drama and making these people, more human.
Yeah.
People have sort of, I guess, held doctors, and I hope they do, in a revered stance and sort of unapproachable. So to see, you know, see the weaker side of these medical professionals is probably good, mm-hmm. you know, good for the population out there, the public.
You know, what's interesting is that, and maybe that has changed over the years, because we see, you know, the weaker side of the doctors, and so we don't necessarily, you know, put them on as much of a pedestal as we did. And maybe one of the great things that these programs do is that they show that the doctors, you know, are human beings as well, and they have their own problems and failings like anyone else.
Right.
But, if you go back to the period when doctors were kind of put on the pedestal, I remember Robert Young, you know, who starred as Marcus Welby, saying that, it was unbelievable. People would, they'd see him in a restaurant or in a store, and they would stop him, and they would diagnose their medical problem to him and ask him, you know, or not diagnose, but they say, well, you know, my hand hurts or this or whatever, what should I do about it? And he said, I'm just an actor who plays a doctor on television. You need to go see a real doctor. He said, but in those days, because that was the way it was done, you know, this guy was just put on a pedestal, and he literally, it caused a lot of problems for him.
I'm sure it did, but, you know, the way the shows are done now, like I said, with the out-of-body experiences and the mm-hmm. near-death experiences and the, you know, the really outlandish, you know, plots that they put these doctors and nurses in. I don't think you see that as much now with these characters being approached in real life.
Yeah. Now, you know, on the reality, stepping off the TV screen and into real life, into the real medical office, has the fear of malpractice suits hampered doctors' abilities to care for patients? You have an opinion on that?
Well, it has. Now, no, in my state, Mississippi, we're one of the top-ranked states having the worst problems with malpractice rates, and it's driven a lot of doctors away, particularly in obstetrics, what I do, and a lot of the smaller towns go underserved, although we have had some legislative changes recently which has beginning to reverse a little bit of that. It has made, you know, doctors think twice about going to certain areas when they, you know, to establish a practice. They do look at the, you know, what are the malpractice rates, the insurance companies in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
I think that does influence it a good bit. We're all trying to, you know, if you become a doctor, you know, that's what you want to do. You want to serve people. And I guess in any profession, there are always hindrances to trying to do that, but we're constantly trying to fight, and doctors have gotten more involved with the legislative process in the last several years. We, you know, providing more and more information to patients and documenting that we've told them that, they're people looking into arbitration agreements that you may sign when you get to your doctor's office, and those kind of things. We're trying to survive out there, and it. But you know, we're not afraid to treat people, and you know, doctors should never be afraid to treat a patient.
Yeah. And as far as you know, talking about changing patient attitudes, how many years have you been in practice?
Be 21 years this summer.
So how has it changed your relationship with patients, say, from 1986 to today?
As far as the malpractice?
Just the patients' attitudes.
Well, the patients are much more informed than they used to be. And I think as you, you know, you get more and more comfortable in your career, I actually sometimes enjoy some of the things more, even delivering babies more than I used to. You know, you just get comfortable in how to handle things better. Patients are quicker to question, you know, different options. They're more, you know, well-informed. I think that's good. They also can get things, you know, misunderstood very easily because there's so much information hitting them out there, what's being advertised to them, you know, what's there just in the lay public for them to read. So you have to be real careful to sort it out with the patient in consultation as to, you know, where they're really coming from when they ask questions or, you know, ask about different alternatives.
All right.
And what their real expectations are.
Mm-hmm. And before we finish up here, I want to give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit about your book, because you're the author of two mystery thrillers. One's called House Call, and your newest release is Points of Origin, both novels set in fictional Mississippi town. But tell us a little bit about Points of Origin.
Points of Origin is a contemporary novel about a plastic surgeon who sets up sort of a plastic surgery dynasty in a town that's a small town in Mississippi but really wants to be a cosmopolitan town. Unfortunately, has a devastating problem with a patient that cost him his career, his reputation, his fortune, and eventually his life. That gets a plaintiff's attorney all excited who has enemies of his own. There's an evil real estate agent after the plaintiff's attorney, and eventually an arsonist gets involved, and that's where the Points of Origin title comes from. Coincidentally, the plastic surgeon's son winds up becoming a fireman instead of a doctor, and basically is pitted against the arsonist at some point in the novel. Part of it is about what can happen to a family when things seem to be going great, and then there's one little mistake, which can be a devastating mistake, that you just cannot overcome.
Wow.
And there are lots of twists and turns in the book. There's some little little comedy relief with a fashion designer involved who's a recurring character from House Call, and I hope it's something people can't put down once they start to read, and that's what I'm told.
All right, and where do we find this book?
Points of Origin can be obtained in any bookstore. If they don't have it in stock, they can easily get it. It can be gotten online through my website, www.dardennorth.com. Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com.
Okay.
Just ask your local independent bookstore to get it for you.
Okay. And by the way, if you want to go to the website, Dr. North's website is DardenNorth.com, and Darden is D-A-R-D-E-N, DardenNorth.com on the World Wide Web. Dr. North, I want to thank you so much for spending some time with us this morning.
Mark, I really enjoyed it. I appreciate it. Hope to come back.
All righty. Thank you very much, and we'll have you back again in the future.
Bye-bye.
All right, 6:51, 9 minutes before the hour. We're going to talk with Cindy Stanley next about Cards and Cocoa for the Troops. And right after we listen to Kim Komando here on 1460 KION, more stimulating talk radio.
After all this time with hundreds of millions of users, the explosive growth, and its appearance in